Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 61 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. Well, today we're going to be talking about why self is not a four-letter word. Yeah, we're talking about self-care. You got that one right. Well, before we launch into that, I want to make sure that you know that this episode of Her is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized just for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to run on over to iTunes after our episode to rate this podcast and review us. We really welcome your thoughts. And guess what? I actually read all these things. Yeah, you heard me right. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about Her.
So we're talking about why self, S-E-L-F, is not a four-letter word. So I think the best way to do this is actually to grab one of the hottest new books on this subject, An Invitation to Self-Care by Tracy Klantas. And she is a licensed marriage and family therapist and also the author of the critically acclaimed book, The Next Happy, Let Go of the Life You Planned and Find a New Way Forward. Oh boy, I can't even tell you, Tracy, how much we needed your book. Welcome to Her.
Thank you so much, Dr. Pham. It's a thrill to be here with you.
Okay, so I constantly, for years and years, I've always ranted and raved about the fact that women especially consider self to be a four-letter word. It's almost like they're embarrassed to believe that they actually have a self because all they seem to do is caregive everyone who comes within 100 feet of them. And then they fall off their own radar screen. And what we have after that is a lot of self-destructive behavior and the whole thing goes to heck. So in your wonderful book, An Invitation to Self-Care, you really begin to tell us what self-care is and what it isn't. So go ahead. What is it?
Well, I'm really glad you asked because I think that people sort of assume that they know what that means. And I think that very often people think of self-care as what you do when you're burned out and you have nothing left. That it's a treat, a reward, a manicure, a pedicure, a massage, moisturizer. All of those things are great and they can be part of your self-care. But what I'm saying is that self-care is much more than that. I'm talking about self-care in a revolutionary concept that you're already doing this. You're taking care of yourself 24 hours a day, 365 days a week. But what's the quality? And the idea that self-care is selfish, you know, the truth is self-care is about being an adult. And if we don't take care of ourselves, we can't take care of anyone else.
Oh, God, that is so right on. It's like that silly thing they always show you, the that little video, nauseating video that you get in the airlines, and it shows when you're sitting next to a child, someone vulnerable, that you always put your oxygen mask on first, because after all, you're worthless if you can't help them.
And absolutely. Dr. Pham, I've never seen anyone on a plane who was going to say, you know what, I'm not going to follow that instruction because it's too selfish. But once the plane hits the ground, we abandon that lesson, and we only give ourselves self-care oxygen, maybe on the weekends. Maybe if we get everything else done, then we can take care of ourselves. But we settle.
Well, you said this was revolutionary, and you actually, in your words, self-care is a daily, lifelong practice. Self-care is self-love. Self-care is taking personal responsibility. Self-care means noticing what matters to us. Self-care must be realistic to be effective. So what you're really arguing, correct me if I'm wrong, in your wonderful book, in your work is that, you know, every single waking moment, every breath we take is really all about our ability, right, to be mindful and present for what we need, what works for us to be able to help support us. So it's not just some scheduled manicure at the end of the week and all the rest of the week is trashed in terms of our own self-care. It's being mindful that it's every single day, right? And every moment of every day. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It's the way that we have it set up now in terms of all of the self-care articles or the self-care advice that I see on Pinterest is, you know, journal, is do something nice for yourself at the end of the day, light a candle, take a bubble bath, and those things are great. But what about the first thing in the morning? What about when you wake up? What about how you tolerate, toxic relationships? How about how you don't feed yourself and you make sure that everybody else is fed? How about that you don't get enough sleep because you feel like that the only way to be a good parent is to self-sacrifice and drain yourself until you have nothing left to give?
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. There are a lot of women out there, especially I personally think, it's a generational thing. I think younger women who are being born and bred into a very different culture, not everyone, but a lot of them, where they do feel entitled to take good care of themselves, where they will go to the gym and not offer 65 excuses why they're going to the gym, et cetera, et cetera. I still struggle with a lot of women in my practice and women that I work with who really find it still to be a selfish thing. Surely someone out there must be needing me this very second. So why am I thinking about myself? So you, as a therapist, give us some tips and techniques we can use to get a woman out of that mindset.
Absolutely. You know, I think to your point, I think that women believe that loving someone means never having to do self-care, that to be a good mother and to be a good wife, that you have to abandon yourself. And, you know, back to that oxygen metaphor on the plane, if we're not taking care of ourselves, we do have nothing to give. But it's also very important for people to look at their survival, that we don't think of, you know, stopping and getting gas. We don't think our car is selfish. We don't think it's selfish that we need to take a breath. But when we're taking care of ourselves, that cultural inherited dictum, I see in young women, you know, maybe they're okay with going to the gym. Maybe they're okay of taking care of themselves in their body. But what I talk about in my work is that self-care isn't just about mind, body, and spirit. It's about every area of your life. It's about how you are in relationships. It's about how you are with strangers. It's about how you take care of your car. It's kind of what kind of clothes you wear. Are you tolerating an underwire bra that's jabbing you? It's about how you take care of your finances. It's about how you let yourself be. So it's not just about body. And I think that I do see young women in my practice who are maybe able to take care of their body, maybe able to make sure that they're going to get that smoothie before they come to session. But boundaries, that's going to be maybe harder. Taking care of their finances.
Well, no, you're bringing up something that's huge here. It just occurred to me. Good grief. You know, I think a lot of women actually define self-care as when's the last time you went to the dentist? How about that, hair appointment at the salon or the manicure, the rest of it? It's all about external. It's, and don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm a physician after all. That's extremely important. You do want to stay up on all of that self-care. But you're bringing up something much bigger. And you're saying, wait a minute, what about your mind? What about your sense of spirit and spirituality? What about your sense of connectivity with other people instead of isolating, being social, et cetera, et cetera? What about your sanity, for crying out loud? When do you take a break mentally to be able to make all of this work? Does this make sense?
Absolutely. And I think to your question of what your listeners can do now and how they can begin to think about self-care in an expansive way and in a revolutionary way is to start by simply noticing what you're doing, what stressors you're facing, and respond accordingly. You know, if our child has to go to the pediatrician, we're going to make sure that we prepare in a different way than if they're just going to go to band practice after school. We prepare differently based on that stressor. We don't do that for ourselves. We power through. We don't prepare. We say, I can take it. I don't need to plan ahead for myself. I'm not going to bring that sweater. I'm not going to bring the metaphorical bag of Cheerios for myself. And I would say that just noticing, what are you facing today? How can you respond accordingly? How would you treat yourself the way you would a child or a beloved? How can I be responsive to what I need today and treat myself like someone I love?
I love it. I absolutely love it. You know, again, I think that it's still a big struggle. I think that, you know, if you look at certain generations of women, their mothers were selfless. See, now there's another word, selfless. Oh, my goodness. She was so selfless, right? And that's sort of like, you know, close to being godlike or something, apparently. And that was sort of a goal for a lot of women. Oh, I don't have a self. I'm selfless. I give to everyone else. All right. So how do you talk to women who literally grew up in that kind of an environment and are trying to duplicate it without realizing what they're actually doing?
With women who have that kind of issue of wanting to be selfless and having that ideal, what they're really after is demonstrating that they love their family. And there's no better way for you to demonstrate your love for your family than to take care of yourself. You know, one of the things I've noticed since writing this book, that the way that people say goodbye to each other very often is to say, take good care. And it's an instruction, and it's a blessing. It's a saying, I want you to be well. And we can't be there. We can't be there for our families. We can't be there for our spouses. We can't be there for work that's important to us if we don't take care of ourselves.
Yep. And you know, what you're actually saying is, let's attach all this to some meaning. And so if a woman is really, in many respects, hardwired to caregive, that gives her huge meaning in life. Then if you now attach it to that, saying you will be the best caregiver if you could do something like constantly be mindful of the fact that you need to stay in great shape and, you know, mentally, physically, spiritually, otherwise nutritionally, then I think it makes more sense for them, because then they can make that connection. You know, there was a great study that was done at Ohio State University in the stress labs there, Barbara Anderson and those researchers. And what they found was that if they took people who were caregivers, right, and these people were caregiving someone who had a, you know, big-time problem, it could be anything. It could be a medical issue that was long-standing, mental issue, both, all the rest of it. If the caregivers were able to do their caregiving, but they also balanced it with their own self-care, versus caregivers who drop everything, let themselves go to heck in deference to that person they're caregiving, what they found was something astonishing. And that is, the people who were living the more balanced caregiving life actually had a much stronger immune system, and they were able to withstand viruses, bacterial, you know, because what they did was they took the blood out of each of those two cohorts, and they found that the blood and the immune system, as it's reflected in the blood, was much stronger. And therefore, the joke here is, oh my gosh, you know, if you're caregiving, you know, without taking good care of yourself, then you're actually getting sick, and you may end up sicker than the person you're caregiving. That's not right. You
Absolutely.
Can't be a most effective caregiver. Is that something that you share with your people too?
I do. And there's, that's, I haven't heard of that study, but it certainly bears out what I see in my practice. And also, I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Dr. Gabor Mate, but he has a wonderful book called When the Body Says No, Understanding the Stress-Disease Connection. And he looks over and over in this book at the impact of self-sacrificing personalities and self-neglecting personalities and how the body responds and how the telomeres are sort of worn down, the DNA strands are worn down by this selflessness, and that there's a sort of character of early chronic illness that goes along with being self-neglectful. So truly, if we're neglecting ourselves, if we're not taking care of ourselves, we're impacting our ability to be around for what we actually value the most. You know, one of the pieces of motivation for me in writing this book, Dr. Pam, was I see so often in my practice, and I've seen in friends, people who have endlessly given, who have been able to meet a need at 500 feet for all their friends, all their family, and anticipate everyone else's needs, and yet continually neglect themselves until there's a crisis, until they get sick, until there's a divorce, until some tragedy happens that they wake up and say, oh my goodness, I have to take care of myself. And I really wanted women and men to know that you don't have to wait until the crisis, that perhaps you can even impact that crisis by taking care of yourself now.
Excellent. And that point is really well made in your book. And again, the name of the book is An Invitation to Self-Care. You kind of take us through a bit of a self-evaluation. Boy, that's a tough one. You know, how well are we doing with all of this? And really sitting back and saying, gosh, you know, do I really attend to myself on a day-by-day basis? Look, you don't have to be a woman to be falling off your own radar screen. Men do it plenty of times, too. It's just that I think that women really struggle with the issue of feeling entitled to take care of themselves. I think that men feel much less of a struggle with that, that they accept the fact that they really do need to take better care of themselves in order to be, you know, whatever they're going to be in life, whether they're a parent or a corporate exec or, you know, whatever the issue may be. But you take us through a self-evaluation, which I think is really kind of cool. And one of the things I thought was really cool here is something else you said. In chapter 11, you talk about self-care at work and play. I like that whole issue of play because I'm always talking about play. We always forget to do that. So what were the heavy hitters in that chapter about self-care at work and play? What should a woman really keep in mind?
There's so much that we once we get into the workplace, you know, this is another area, Dr. Pam, that very often we feel okay doing self-care, but we don't even know it's self-care. We're not even aware that our work and our goals are related to actually taking care of ourselves. We're providing for ourselves in our work. But very often in the environment of work, people get into a mindset of, okay, I'm going to power through. I'm going to really succeed. I'm going to achieve these goals. And then once I achieve these goals, then I can do self-care. And the reality is that if you're not doing self-care, you're not going to achieve those goals. Maslow his hierarchy of...
Well, that's huge. Well, that's absolutely huge, because you also brought up something really important here, which is what I was hoping you were going to say, and that is we defer. We as women say, oh, you know, as soon as XYZ takes place, I'll go ahead and take care of myself. As soon as this happens, I'll do that. Right?
I call it living your life on layaway. You're going to do it later.
Oh, I love
you're going to you're going to someday when everything, all the ducks are in a row. Then you're going to get to do it. But then we don't understand why, you know, all of a sudden we collapse and we're not able to complete that project, or we're not able to follow through on something that's so important for our work life. And we're exhausted and we're overwhelmed and we get depressed and we procrastinate and maybe don't do as great a job as we could because we're delaying that self-care till later. So the truth is that if we do that, take care of ourselves, if we're asking ourselves to run a marathon, we're going to make sure we have a sports bra, that we've trained, that we've eaten carbohydrates, that we've done the things we need, that we've got good shoes to prepare. But when we're engaged in a marathon in our work life, we show up with no bra and barefoot and expect to succeed. So what I'm saying is, don't, of course, you have to take care of your work, and your work is part of your self-care. But how can you integrate some self-care in your work environment? How can you be kind
to yourself?
Well,
one of the things I love to have women do is to take that, you know, whenever you have that lunch break or back and forth, if you have a moment, get outside, walk. You know, spend a moment with yourself. Find a pleasant place to be able to just take sort of a walking meditation. Listen to music, you know, put on those AirPods and, you know, do your thing. Because it's really important to create what I love to call a sacred space. And, you know, you don't even have to, it doesn't have to be a physical space. It could just be sort of be a cone of safety is what I love to, you know, I always smile and call it, to be able to, you know, do the limits and boundaries. You know, that's another issue that you brought up in your book. Women have no limits and boundaries. You know, we just sort of like, okay, just sort of throw it out there. Instead of being able to say that magic word, but say it well, and that is, you know, thank you very much for inviting me to be on the 50th, you know, committee that I don't really want to be on. And just, you know, graciously say, you know, that's not going to work for me right now. So the answer is no. I'm terribly sorry, but, you know, it's going to be no. Maybe come back next year and we'll have another discussion about it. Women have this issue with the word no.
Yes, there's
so,
an anticipation.
So what do you tell them?
What I see with clients is that they, when they anticipate saying no, they're afraid of hurting someone's feelings. They're imagining that there's going to be a sense of rejection. They're going to disappoint someone. And so really looking at that, and there, of course that you're not going to say, no thanks, no, I'm not interested, and moving on. There's a way to set your boundary and say no in a way that's kind, respectful, compassionate, and certainly caring for yourself. That no doesn't have to be something that hurts someone else. I mean, you and I have heard no many times, and we're still okay. And the reality is that the person that you're going to say no to, they're going to be okay. And I do a lot of practicing, and I have some exercises in the book about how to set those boundaries, about how to practice, and because it's so difficult for people. I mean, very often in my practice, when I talk about boundaries, people look at me like I'm speaking a foreign language. Well, what is that? Isn't that bad? Shouldn't if I love someone, shouldn't I have no boundaries? No, boundaries are what are necessary for defining who you are and what you need and taking care of yourself and having successful relationships.
Absolutely. No question about it. And I love that. I want everyone out there in her podcast land to get that right, okay? When we're talking about something like boundaries, it's okay. It's what protects you, for crying out loud. And guess what, girlfriends? You need protection. You do. From yourself. Because you just give yourself away too freely. And you don't take a moment. So I always ask everyone to just pause. Can we all just kind of pause and just, you know, be able to say to ourselves, okay, I think I need to be able to say no, that's not going to work for me. I'm going to pause and I'm going to say, you know, I really do want to go to the gym and work out and maybe go to that really cool new class, that new yoga class, instead of listening to a friend who's going to talk interminably about an upcoming divorce. Right? You got to be able to say no. And those limits and boundaries can be life-saving, actually. They can be
Absolutely.
Life-saving.
And you know what I see so often, Dr. Pam, is when people don't set those boundaries, then they need to find some way to take care of themselves that may be destructive. That if they're not able set that boundary, they need to numb out, or they need to eat that pint of Haagen-Dazs, or they need to Netflix binge, or they need to go shopping. They're doing something to feel better because they're not dealing with the actual self-care that they need to do. They needed to say no. They needed to say, you know what, honey, I need you to watch the kids. I'm going to go to that yoga class. No, friend, you're going to need to, you know, talk to somebody else about that today. I'm here for you. I love you, but I've got to go. I've got to go do this thing. And when we don't do that, we end up feeling disrespected. We end up feeling icky and we want to feel better. And so then we go for some kind of fix. We go for some, what I call gray self-care. And it's okay. It's certainly okay to every now and then have that second glass of wine. But if every time you talk to a friend who you can't set a boundary with, you need two glasses of wine, now there's a red flag that we need to address.
Yeah, you're numbing out, you know, and that's not going to work, right? And that's just, it's not a great thing, right? So this is one of the reasons why I love this book, because it also helps give you tips, tools, and techniques to be able to take better care of yourself all the way around. You go through financial self-care, body self-care, mind self-care, your self-care and your spirit. Give us some thoughts about self-care and your spirit. Now, that's an interesting one.
Sure. And I just wanted to quickly address, because in terms of the tips and tools, you know, it was just so important to me that this book not be prescriptive. Because the truth is, we all know the good things that we should be doing. Most of us know we should be taking better care of ourselves. We should eat our vegetables. We should be doing all of these things. And so for me just to say to you, you should do this, it's not going to be so effective. What I see in my practice, in my clinical work, is that if I help someone get to their own answers, you know, in terms of spirit, let's say, I can make all kinds of suggestions. Okay, you know, if religion is important to you, that maybe you need to be going to church more frequently. That may actually not be the right answer for you. Your answer might be, I need to go on hikes. That helps me feel connected to spirit. Or I feel connected to something larger than myself when I read poetry. Or when I feel fed spiritually is when I go to the ocean or I look at pictures of my ancestors. There's lots of ways to do spiritual self-care, but I don't know what's best for you. You do. And even if I knew what was best for you, you probably wouldn't listen to me. So I really didn't want to create a book or a mindset where I was the authority, because the truth is, you're the authority of you. You know you better than anyone. So I wanted to create questions that lead you to your best answers in terms of how to take care of yourself in your spirit, your body, in your boundaries, in your work life, in your play life. You know the answers for you. I want to help you get to those answers.
Oh, I love it. You know what you're doing is you're individualizing. And you're making this a very personal thing for each woman out there. And I just really think that this is the way to go. I think too many women want it to be prescriptive. Do A, B, and C, and then life will be wonderful. Instead of really putting the time in to customize and individualize, also to honor your own uniqueness. And I think that's what you really meant to say, you know, throughout the book, and certainly as you ended the book with that whole issue of self-care and spirit. Because, you know, at the end of the day, We spend so much time studying everybody else and their needs and their wants and what works for them. And we spend zip in terms of time on ourselves outside of some really technical issues like what kind of computer do I need? You know, how about those highlights, you know, when I talk to my hairdresser? Instead of really going much, much deeper and saying, wow, you know, when was the last time I took a moment today for a mini chill? When was the last time I just took a moment today to maybe write in my journal, to really sit back and contemplate something that was important to me? When's the last time I meditated? When's the last time I went outside just for a walk, maybe just with the dog and just sort of enjoyed being in nature? What happened to all of that? And I think in your book, An Invitation to Self-Care, you really remind us of all of this. And I love it. Tracy, you have been nothing but a fount of knowledge on this whole issue of self-care. Everyone, we've been talking to Tracy Clantis. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist who's written one heck of a fantastic book. And if you get it for yourself, but guess what? Get it for your girlfriends too, because we all have this issue. Honey, if you've ever owned a set of ovaries, trust me, the self-care thing is a problem. An Invitation to Self-Care is the name of the book by Tracy Clantis. And her website is Tracy, and that's T-R-A-C-E-Y Clantis, C-L-E-A-N-T-I-S.com. Please do us all a favor, grab the book. Tracy, thank you for having been on the Her Podcast.
Thank you so much, Dr. Pam. It's my pleasure.
All right. Hey, everyone out there. Remember to catch every episode of HER. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take 30 seconds, even less, and rate this podcast on iTunes. And also, please give us a review. I love reading these. Most importantly, I love hearing from you. So please, please do that. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD, and you can also check out our HER show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Hey, thanks for listening, and stay well.